Welcome to First Things First, everyone. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. All good, guys?
Good morning.
Good morning. We got a big show today. A lot going on.
Man.
Cowboys front office, they're putting some pressure on Jason Garrett. We have a Lakers Hall of Famer who's getting fed up with his former team, but we are going to start with yet another bad loss for the Boston Celtics. They got blown out to the Toronto Raptors by 23 points, their biggest loss of the season thus far. Kyrie Irving, who just days ago said nobody could beat this Boston team in seven games, was held to just 7 points last night. Boston has now dropped five of their last seven. Is it chemistry? Is it effort? Is it personnel? Is it coaching? Here's Marcus Smart when asked what he thinks is wrong with this team.
We're just not together. Last couple of years, we were together, and when everything hit, to become stronger, we're not there yet. Like I said, we're going to get there. It's just taking time.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus the pain?
Is it yours?
Brad talked about just defensively, you guys have been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, you feel like?
I don't know. It's up to Brett.
Clearly, there's tension on this team. Clearly, there's frustration on this team. Nick, what do you think has led to what has been a very disappointing stretch for the Celtics?
Well, in the micro, last night was the continuation of a trend over these last three games. The road loss to Milwaukee, which was a good game, a one loss at Milwaukee. There's no shame in that. Then the awful loss to the Bulls, and then a blowout loss to the Raptors. And the trend is they absolutely have fallen apart in a time in a game where in years past, even at the beginning of this year, they excelled. That's when the bench unit comes in the second quarter. Look at what the Celtics have been in this three-game losing streak. The left column is what the point differential in the first quarter is. The right column is the second quarter. Every single one of these games, they've led after one and gotten obliterated during the second quarter.
Same thing last night.
Last night, it was as bad as it could possibly be. I think it was 36-13 in the second quarter. Kyrie goes to the bench. The team falls apart. Gordon Hayward gets more involved. Terry Rozier gets more involved. And they have no answers. And that, to me, is what is the most concerning thing for the Boston Celtics. Because amongst the other teams in the Eastern Conference, they are not going to have the most talented starting lineup. They do not have more talented starting lineup than Philly, than Milwaukee, nor than Toronto. But they're supposed to have more depth than everyone except for maybe Toronto. They're supposed to have a second unit that was good enough to be a starting five.
Yeah, they're supposed to be eight deep.
Absolutely.
Where all eight of those 100%. Players could start.
And when that second unit comes in, they have fallen apart. So that's the micro. The macro is what I have been trying to say all year long, which is there is no there with this team. What are the Celtics great at? Once upon a time, they were a great defensive team. Now they're a good defensive team. They've never been a great offensive team. Aside from Kyrie Irving going isolation, which is not what Brad Stevens wants to do, what is the thing that they are great at? We know what Toronto's great at. We know what Milwaukee's great at. We know what Philadelphia, and in their best case scenario, can be great at. What are the Celtics great at? And why can they not win against good teams on the road? These are all real questions we have to answer. And at this point, the easiest answer is probably the right one. They're just a good team. They're a fine basketball team. Mm-hmm. They're a type of team that typically gets to the second round of the NBA playoffs and gets bounced. That's what they've looked like all year long.
But our problem is where they were last year. You add two all-stars that were hurt, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, Brad Stevens, one of the best coaches in the NBA. You add him to the mix with these young players and how they had grown in Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They signed Marcus Smart to be able to come back. Marcus Morris, a great veteran player. Man, he can play for me.
Having his best year.
Al Horford, he can play for me. These guys are not me guys. They're great guys. Everywhere they've been, their teammates rant and rave about them. So, man, what's the problem? In the NBA, when you look at the best teams, we can go up and down, go to the East, go to the West, but typically you can identify a team with a name and say, you know something? It's that guy's team. But in Boston, I mean, they were supposed to be a collection of very good with Gordon Hayward coming over. He's going to recover from this injury. Like, they're really, really talented, their first eight. But Whose team is it? Because we know Golden State, regardless of what they say, KD might think it is, Klay is enjoying himself.
It's Steph's team.
It's Steph's team. Right?
I think you don't think Boston is clearly Kyrie's team?
Oh, no. Because let's look up and down. It's in Milwaukee, we know. It's Giannis. In Philadelphia.
It's Embiid.
All right, in Toronto.
It's Kawhi.
It might be rented, but
sure,
it's...
but it's Kawhi's team.
So when you look at it, OKC, whose team is it?
Well, it used to be Russ's team. I think Paul George is taking it, but...
Paul George don't care. It's
right,
Russ's team.
It's Russ's team. Got it.
Up and sure. down it. We know in Houston. It's clear.
Harden's team.
Now, one of the reasons why Kyrie left Cleveland, and one of the things that he stated was, I want my own team. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to be under a coach where I feel like I can grow. Those are things he stated. I don't believe that Kyrie believes that Brad Stevens, now he's been there, is as good a coach as people had thought. And Kyrie didn't pick the Celtics. So this is not his team. And you can see that. When they, that first quarter, like you was, if you say, okay, I'm just going to go to bed now. Mm-hmm. You are not going to believe what's getting ready to happen for the next three quarters.
And only minutes later.
And the reason why, because Kyrie could stop all that. Just like easily he could say something in the press conference, but he realizes in trying to be a leader, he said too much. Now he's trying to dial it back, but they don't like being with each other. No, that team doesn't have an identity. So that's where the Celtics are right now, Jim.
I want to ask you a question about Kyrie. Kyrie has played in 5 of the last 7 games. The Celtics lost all 5 of them. The 2 he didn't play in, they won. How do you explain that when maybe he's not the face of the team, but he certainly should be?
It is, to me, one of the more inexplicable stats throughout this NBA season is that the Celtics have been better when Kyrie's been out, win-loss record, and all their metrics have been worse when he's off the court versus when he's on the court. So all the analytics say the Celtics, and the eye test, to me, says the Celtics are better when Kyrie's playing. Within these games that he is playing in the game,
sure,
when he goes to the bench, they get much worse. But they have been uncanny in their ability when they are the team they were in the playoffs last year, which is really all it takes is removing Kyrie from the lineup for a game, and they're the team they were last year because Gordon Hayward is not a big factor for this team one way or the other. As soon as that happens, they become the team that was a game away from the finals last year. I can't listen. I've watched the Celtics incredibly closely, as I know you have, Chris. I can't explain that because I actually think Kyrie's having the best year of his career, so it doesn't make sense. But we now have a big enough sample. There is something to that.
Brad Stevens has the type of system that might work better with less talent. Also, when Terry Rozier takes over the point guard, he lets you know he can take over a team. So when he takes over and fills in, you know what the Celtics become? They become a system team. You know what? They move the ball more. You know something, too? It becomes a, you know, we're not as talented, but I got your back. He's got his back. He's got his back. So collectively, they play better defense. That's who the Celtics were last year. That's what got them to the finals. And when Kyrie is not on the court, that's what you're seeing. So the analytics and everything, they might say something else. But on the court, when Terry Rozier is the point guard, and right, that's what the Celtics are going to have to be, because they're in a tough place because Kyrie holds all the cards. But I believe that Terry Rozier is going to be the point guard of their future because their system offensively is based on ball movement. Defense in the NBA is not based on talent. It's based on, am I going to buy into, I will protect you at all costs. I will make myself look bad. And when we don't see that with the Lakers, you get bad defense. Yes, are they better with Lonzo Ball on the court? Yes, but when you don't have that, I'm buying in for my brother. Across the NBA, you will not get good defense.
If it's a Brad Stevens system issue, then the reality is this offseason, Brad Stevens needs to adjust the system. Because if your system works best...
But the system worked last year and was successful.
But it didn't, because they would have gotten washed in the finals. They lost to a Cavs team that was LeBron and a bunch of guys. If your system maxes out when you have not maximum talent, then your system is not an NBA championship system. Because we know this, in the NBA, if you need a good system, you need a good coach, you need all those things. To win championships,
you
must have elite talent.
A dude.
And so if whatever tweaks you need to make to your system, if you're right, Chris, those tweaks need to be made. Because whether the Celtics keep Kyrie or not, whether they trade for Anthony Davis or not, or whether they just hope Jason Tatum turns into that guy, you need a system that is at its best when you've got an MVP-caliber player on the court. Because if not, You max out at, hey, that team overachieved again and got bounced in the conference finals. That team, wow, how'd they win 51 games and get bounced in the second round? That's not what the Celtics' plan is. That's not what they've been preached about. And one last point before we go. Kyrie's interview, there's very interesting. Reading some reports from the local media after the game, when the locker room opened up, sitting next to Kyrie Irving, talking to him quietly, was Danny Ainge. I'm very curious what those conversations have been like, what they are like, and how much Danny was maybe doing some preemptive triage on, listen, man, let's keep the frustration right here. Because Kyrie answered 5 questions, said 18 words in his post-game interview, and we can read into it, but it's a lot better than some of the interviews he's done in the past where it becomes a big story. I wonder how much of that was the counsel from Danny Ainge right before we got to hear from him.
Interesting stuff. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, the Cowboys, they're putting pressure on Jason Garrett. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. Welcome back. We'll talk some Cowboys in a second, but first, college hoops. Liberty University's Caleb Holmesley with a one-handed throwdown. My, oh, my.
Liberty University's been in the highlights a few times. They got a new big-time football coach now, too, the guy from Ole Miss going there, Hugh Freeze. Forgot his name for a moment. Appreciate that.
To the G League now, Grayson Allen playing for the Salt Lake City Stars. A little one-handed alley-oop.
And I wish luck to Grayson Allen. And Salt Lake City is about the biggest city I anticipate he'll be playing basketball in over the next few years. A lot of Fort Wayne's in his future. Boise, maybe. Grayson.
Man, I hope one day he gets back to the NBA, man.
Okay. Well, there's one person on the desk rooting for him.
Knicks, Magic, Alonzo, Tree are getting to the basket with the spin move before the nice layup.
Now, he's a good pickup.
Woo!
Absolutely. Wherever they found him, whoever found him, man, they did a good job of finding him.
That's probably Scott Perry would be my guess. That is, Mitchell Robinson's been fun for them. Now, they've won a couple games in a row. That's not part of the plan.
Yes,
but
right.
It's a good win.
Thunder Bad Nuggets, win. Paul win. George gets the ball on the fast break, rocks the rim. Boom.
Rough game for Paul George last night, actually. But Denver
got off to a slow start.
Denver's been the toughest place to win in the NBA this year. I think they're 27-4 at home so far this season.
But Paul George, the last 25 games, has been spectacular.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. They've got a busy offseason ahead of them, a to-do list with a number of players they want to sign. They also have a big question mark with Jason Garrett entering the final year of his head coaching contract. Despite being on the hot seat most of the year, Dallas won the NFC East and a playoff game against Seattle. However, Stephen Jones says the Cowboys will not be complacent moving forward.
No one thinks more of him than we do. But at the same time, I know he uses it. Everybody's back's against the wall right now. We've got a really good young team. We've got high expectations for this young team. And everybody from Jason to his staff to our players to ownership to the organization feels the pressure to take the next step. Our fans deserve that. And we hadn't done it. We hadn't done it in a long time. And we certainly feel the pressure to do it.
CeCe, I feel like we were asking this question a lot last year when it comes to Jason Garrett, but is this coming season now going to be a make or break season for the head coach?
I don't think it should be. You know, to me, I think it's a good fit with the ownership there. Jerry always talks about there's no bigger fan of Jason Garrett. Well, then at some point, I think before the season, they should extend him. He shouldn't be a lame duck coach going into last year. It's hard to coach that way. It's hard to have the authority over the locker room when you're coaching for your livelihood, because will you make the right decisions game in, game out, if I don't have a contract going forward? So I don't believe it's the right thing. I don't believe he should be coaching. Now, there's probably a lot of other people think, well, there are better coaches out there for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, based on who the ownership is, I don't think so. So I know you might think you want to grab a young guy, but I think he is the right fit. They should give him an extension. Those are tough conditions to work under, but it really should be about some continuity. I'm concerned about the offense. I'm concerned about who's going to call plays. I'm concerned about the overall identity. Will they go back to a run-first team, an offensive dominant team? Because they have to be able to get some variance in their offense if they want to continue to try to grow. So I like the fact that that offensive line, that should be the dominant part of the offense. So we need someone to develop opposite of Amari Cooper, need to develop a tight end. Also, Ezekiel Elliott, you have to get him the ball out of the backfield, throwing him the ball in this season, because that's what you expect as a running back for him to be able to grow that part of his game. Defensively, they're going to have to get a couple defensive linemen. They need a playmaker at safety, someone who can be able to turn the football over, someone that's better in man-to-man coverage against tight ends down the middle of the field. So that's what they should be working on. You can't go into the season worrying about the coach when they got some legitimate question marks. Kellen Moore being the offensive coordinator, first time as a young player. John Kitna taking over coaching the quarterbacks. What is he going to do? So you don't want that to start to permeate the locker room and people question, is Jerry running this year or is Jason Garrett still in control?
Yesterday wasn't a great day for Cowboys fans because of the Randy Gregory news and potentially with the David Irving news. But I think if you're a Cowboys fan, I think those comments from Stephen Jones really should make you feel good about where the team's mindset is. And here's why. I would have expected the Cowboys to feel great about last season. Started 3-5. The last 10 games of the year, including the playoffs, 8-2. You win a playoff game for the first time since 2014, just the second time in the Jason Garrett era. You're in the second round. You're one of the last 8 teams remaining. There's a lot of reasons where I would have expected to hear from Steven or Jerry saying everything's going in the right direction.
Rest on their
feel
laurels.
Great. And even if they're not resting on their laurels, to publicly say, hey, guys, it started off tough. Once we got Amari Cooper, we're one of the best teams in football. Instead, they're saying what I think is more accurate and more honest, which is this is a very important year. This is, we do have an expensive offensive line, a superstar running back. We think now a star wide receiver. Obviously, we like our quarterback. This is an important year to not just be fighting for the last division spot available or fighting for a wild card spot. To go into the season saying, if we don't get back to a conference championship game for the first time in what is now over 2 decades, then it has been a failure. Like, I think that is because there are a lot of teams that I think would have had the type of season the Cowboys had, which is it's over at the midway point and then right. It turns around and say, you know what? That's who we were. That's where we're picking up. We feel great. Mm-hmm. So I think part of that urgency is one of the reasons they're not giving Jason Garrett the contract extension, which is, the audience should know, very odd. It's very odd in the NFL for a NFL coach to to ever have to coach the final year of his deal. Particularly, the only time you ever see it happen really is if he's on his first contract with a team and they were probably going to fire him after year 3, but then at the end of year 3 you win 4 in a row, they're like, "Okay, we'll give you at least the beginning of year 4." So it's an odd situation, but I understand why they're doing it.
You guys have said often, not every team in this league is playing to win a Super Bowl. Some of them are just playing, and the Cowboys have always been that team that plays to win a Super Bowl, and it seems like, to your point, they've gotten away from that the last couple years and been satisfied with making it to the playoffs or having a guy like Zeke or the promising career that Dak's going to have. And you're right. It's nice to see that now maybe the bar has been re-raised again to back where Dallas Cowboys standards used to be.
Well, the one thing Dallas has to do, they have to get off to a fast start. You can't try to overcome what they had to last year. You know the competition in the NFC. Nick always points it out as far as the types of quarterbacks that you're going to be going against. Man, you're going to have a good football team to be able to get into the championship game, let alone a Super Bowl. The New York Football Giants, they've been off a couple years. We expect them to get better. The Washington Redskins are the only team in that division that typically might go backwards from where they were because we don't know about Alex Smith and their quarterback situation. We know Philadelphia. They got 2 quarterbacks there, and they got a talented roster, and they might add more talent to that roster this offseason, even though they have some cap problems. But the Dallas Cowboys, they're in a tough situation. How do they get better? They have to be more efficient throwing the football. The same thing we've been talking about the last couple years. Now they have Amari Cooper. So him and Dak have a whole offseason to be able to work. So that's one part of the passing game. They need to be able to attack deep down the field because they're not a deep, effective, throwing the ball deep football team. They don't have a change of pace. I know Cole Beasley in the slot. he'll be sufficient, but they need a number two wide receiver. Will that be Allen Hurns? They're very excited. He's going to come off of his surgery. He had that horrific injury at the end of the season. He should be like a number three guy. They need their tight ends to develop because for 12 games last year, their tight end was non-existent in this offense. So what type of theme will Kellen Moore, very, very young, the pressure of calling plays for the Dallas Cowboys, what does that do for him? Does that empower him, or does, man, who is he? Because we don't know that.
Will he even be allowed to call plays throughout the whole year? Is it going to be more Jason Garrett taking that smothering over? Right. And so that, but this Cowboys era, the Jason Garrett era, which is now going on year 10, has been defined by stops and starts. They go 12-4, the Dez didn't catch it year. Mm-hmm. And the next year, Romo gets hurt, and they win four games. They then draft Dak, and Romo gets hurt. They go 13-3. They have the epic playoff game against Aaron Rodgers. They lose on a field goal. And the next year, they go 9-7. Now, they make the playoffs. Will this be another year where the following year they take a step back? They haven't made back-to-back playoffs since the triplets era. So that's what's
on. That's a real goal.
That's a real goal, and that, to me, is what Stephen Jones is talking about, is we can't be satisfied. And, yeah, it's not a Super Bowl or bust year, even if, obviously, they're one of the teams that is Super Bowl-focused. But it is a, we can't be 6-6 and saying, man, but we're alive if we go 4-0 down the stretch.
Right.
The standard and the level of talent they have is higher than that and should demand more than that.
All right, we'll take a break there. Coming up, another team where the standard should be a little higher, the Lakers. Are they in danger of missing out on a free agent this summer? That's next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off in just 100 days. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champs head to France. They're just going to France.
Thanks.
All the matches will be live on Fox and FS1. See what happens when
I'm not excited
fancy
for Jenna to say France again, but I am excited for that.
That'll be fun.
U.S. women.
Time for us
dominate
to go viral. All right, so yesterday, members of the Portland Trailblazers got stuck in an elevator for 30 minutes at Emerson College in downtown Boston. Enes Kanter and Myers Leonard documented the whole thing for social media, which was interesting. I will tell you, 2 weeks ago, I got stuck in the elevator here at Fox. The last thing I wanted to do was pull out my phone, and that was the last. So I'm very entertained by the fact that they...
Everybody be careful now.
One of my all-time fears, man. Not about the elevator dropping, but being trapped in that type of confined space with other human beings.
How many guys were coming out of here?
Yeah, no. C always tries to screw with me, get me on these elevators with a bunch of strangers, not my thing, then starts real awkward conversation with me.
Yeah, I got stuck in my elevator earlier in the football season.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they called the fire department and everything. They came in there, man, I was in there sitting down nice and cool, working on my...
But if it was us... Can you imagine the great dialogue?
I feel like I'm already stuck.
I'd climb out. I'd jump.
You guys are the worst. I would love to be stuck with you, too.
Oh, please.
Yeah. There's so many things I want to know about you.
No. Jenna.
Tell you about me. Time for stories to start your morning. Tough news for the Dallas Cowboys. Defensive end Randy Gregory was suspended indefinitely by the NFL for violating the league's substance abuse policy. CeCe, what was your reaction when you heard this?
Not only Randy Gregory, but it's been a sad story last several years. How many talented players have we lost because their inability, once they get in the drug program, once they get suspended, once they have that 3 testing a week, it's hard to survive. So I'm always an advocate for people. And Randy Gregory, I've been in conversations with him. I wrote a letter to the league. So anytime this happens, I know addiction, it's about, man, trying to love people. And typically situations like this, it's hard for normal people to understand. So my heart goes out to him and his family. But, man, we're in a bad, bad stretch of quality football players that are losing their career over substance abuse.
When C says you wrote a letter for him, you advocating for the NFL to get back into the league. And I don't think, I don't want to speak for you, just because this happened, I don't think you regret that. I think it was. And you and I talked before the show, like, this is something that you will continue to battle the rest of your life.
Right.
That you still have to keep a program. You still have to keep with personal and mental maintenance on these things. So this, I don't like when people hear this and they're like, oh, what a moron. It's not about that. It stinks. It's bad for the Cowboys. It's obviously really bad for Randy. Mm-hmm. But the hope is, football or otherwise, that he can get back on the program he was on for the better part of the last year that allowed him to play in the league.
To the NBA now. The Celtics got blown out by the Raptors last night. They've now dropped 5 of their last 7 games. Nick, what has gone so wrong for Boston?
Not that good. Some people thought that all year long, and people thought I was just making it up. I need to see some evidence that they're one of the 5 or 6 best teams in the league. I've seen no evidence of it all year long. I need to see some evidence that this team, as good as Kyrie has been individually, that this team with Kyrie can go on the road and beat good teams. Because I haven't seen evidence of that either. They've now lost 3 in a row in 5 of 7. The 2 they haven't won, or they haven't lost. Kyrie actually happened to be out. Celtics in a bad way right now.
Yeah,
Steve.
People think about talent. Talent is one thing. But, man, when you show up to your job and you don't like who you work with, it is affecting, especially in team sports. And right now, that's what we keep forgetting. Get what we're seeing. What have we heard from the Celtics the last month? Oh, it's not fun to play basketball. Well, how can you not be having fun being in the NBA? One of the rarest athletes in the world. Like, it's not fun. You only got 82 games. Like, that right there.
The only way it's not fun is if you don't enjoy the people you work with. That's the only way the NBA life, with the money and the travel and the ability, is if you don't enjoy the
people. That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, that's the reality of it, and that's something Boston's running out of time to figure out.
Man, I had a job like that before.
The Nuggets, you don't anymore. The Nuggets beat the Thunder 121-112 last night. They were led by Nikola Jokic, who had 36 points, 10 assists, 9 boards. Now just a game back of the Golden State Warriors. Nick, is Denver a legitimate threat in the West?
To me, not a legitimate threat to reach the NBA Finals. I don't think they, as good as Jokic is throughout the game, he is not the end-of-game closer I think they need, but he was excellent last night, and I really, really, and they've been the best home team in the league this year, 27-4. So if they do get home court, they're going to be a tough out for anybody. But I liked what Jokic said. He got MVP chance during the game, and he said, listen, those are pretty funny to me. There's obviously players in the league better than I am, playing better than I am. I just go out there every night and try to improve. And he has been excellent. He has been. If the MVP ballot went to 10 names, he'd be on there. He's been great. And the Nuggets have been unstoppable at home this
year.
The
other thing, because we always talk about the Lakers and their lack of developing young players. Mm-hmm. Denver and what they do. Man, they got some good young players. And it's nice that Jokic can get that type of attention. So coming down the stretch, we should have more eyes on Denver, because they've actually earned it.
Speaking of the Lakers, more on their disappointing season. 3 games back of the 8th seed, which is 22 games left to go. I'd say that's disappointing. Not great when you got the best player in the game on your team. One columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle said, quote, makes no sense for a big name to join LeBron and the Lakers in free agency this summer. Nick, you buying this?
All right, let's all calm down. Let's not overreact to what has been unquestionably a bad, we're now on 2-month stretch for the Lakers. From the moment LeBron James said, I felt the pop on Christmas Day, to right now, it's gone about as badly as it could for the Lakers. But unless LeBron went from, in the span of 9 months, the consensus unquestioned best player in the world, to where now he's, wow, that contract's gonna be an albatross for them. They're still in Los Angeles. They still have a guy, when healthy, who's the best player in the world, or even if you don't believe that anymore, one of the 3 best players in the world, and they have max salary cap space. This columnist in Golden State, or in the San Francisco area, I think it's a little self-serving. I think he knows Kevin Durant's probably leaving, and if that happens, LeBron James plus another superstar, we have seen that team beat
the Kevin Durant-less Golden State Warriors. So, no, I don't buy that, well, the sky is falling, LeBron's kingdom is crumbling, because it's been a bad 2 months that right smack dab in the middle of it coincided with LeBron's first injury of his career.
I've been doing this long enough that I like when we have moments like this, especially a columnist from San Francisco, you know, with the rivalry with Los Angeles and especially with LeBron being there now. It's hard sometimes not to write something that's slanted in your favor. And so I went back and got something, the San Francisco Chronicle, that they wrote July the 4th. Nick, I want you to read that.
Okay, like July the 4th of 2016.
Yes.
All right.
The day after they signed Kevin Durant.
Headline, Warriors will never be the same after signing Kevin Durant. Hooray, sort of. By landing Kevin Durant, the Warriors have pulled off the greatest coup in the NBA since LeBron James took his talents to South Beach. The Warriors' amazing transformation from longtime beat-down losers to America's hoops team has taken another giant step. It's the story when they got Kevin Durant and talking about, we're excited, but it's going to be different now.
It's going to be very different, and the reason why is because we believe in Steph, but we don't believe in Steph going against LeBron. Wherever he is. And he said he had to put LeBron back into the story. They know the danger in the next couple years, especially with Kevin Durant. They know it's real. We saw the turmoil. We saw what Draymond said. We didn't make that up. Kevin Durant not committing to the Golden State Warriors, it's affect how people write stories. And him going there ultimately affected how they looked at that basketball team. But everyone in the basketball world knows they better not give LeBron another superstar while he's in his prime, because he is the only player that the Warriors are terrified about. They're not afraid of James Harden. They're not afraid of Giannis. They haven't seen Giannis yet.
They might one day be, but
they're not afraid of Kawhi. They're not afraid of Kyrie Irving and the Celtics. LeBron James is that guy. And the reason why, because they have felt it and they have seen it. We cannot forget how well LeBron has played. Forget about the series, how many games they won, how many they lost. But in those series, the numbers and the impact LeBron had on the game, almost playing the whole game with no help or a little bit of help, they have
NBA
not forgotten
finals,
that.
The four NBA finals, this is off the top of my head, against the Warriors. The first one with Love and Kyrie out, 36-13-9, and went to six games. The second one, down 3-1, greatest three-game stretch in the history of basketball. They win the championship. The third one, he averaged a triple-double, and last year started the finals with a 51-9-9, with his second-best player being
right.
Jeff
And they're
Green.
One stop away from changing that series.
Absolutely.
Can I just play devil's advocate for a second? So let's talk about today, February 27th. Is it on the table that a superstar out there says, if I'm going to make a big move like this, I want to win, I want to play with the best LeBron James, like LeBron James as the best player in the league, a healthy LeBron James, and a team that I know is going to be built around us that we could win. None of those things are really true for the Lakers right now. Maybe he is just injured and he'll get back to vintage LeBron, but is it on the table that maybe that's the thought process that one of these superstars might be thinking?
Well, I think it might be. It certainly could be the thought process that one of these superstars is thinking, but it's much like if you're on trial. You only need to convince one juror that you didn't do it, and you ain't going to jail. Like, they only need to convince one free agent. Mm-hmm. And LeBron has relationships with all these guys, and the respect level that he has amongst the other stars in the league. I just want to go ahead, C.
And it's the Lakers. Well, LeBron's on the Lakers. So, before LeBron, they were in search of a star. After LeBron, they'll still be in search of stars. They are a franchise that is committed to championships. So LeBron is a part of that, but we can't forget the impact that LeBron has on these players now. Their greatest player that they've ever seen is LeBron James.
Listen, and real quick, I just want to remind the audience, there has been a moment of potential crisis for LeBron's teams every time he's changed teams. And there have been columns written saying that they lose to the Mavs. That wasn't the crisis yet. Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett are then talking cash money in LeBron's face. Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, down 3-2 against Boston. And the stories are written. LeBron James is never going to fulfill his promise, never going to win a championship. He puts up the 45-15-5. They win the title. It goes to Cleveland 4 years later. They lose the first year in the finals. They're down 3-1. Story's written. LeBron's never going to deliver on his promise. I'd be careful writing the stories. 4 years after that, LeBron's never going to deliver on his promise in L.A.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Combine is this weekend. All eyes will be on Heisman winner Kyler Murray. How tall is he? How big are his hands? Can he win over general managers? However, when it comes to his play on the field, wait till you hear who our own Joel Klatt has compared him to.
I think he's better on both accounts than Michael Vick, who was a unanimous number one overall pick. Michael Vick had a really strong arm, a howitzer. Okay, Josh Allen-esque. I mean, this dude could throw it. But as a runner and a passer, Kyler is better than Michael Vick was.
See, I'm curious what you think about what Joel Klatt had to say.
Well, it's obvious he's a better thrower. Michael Vick was never a good thrower of the football. There's a lot of people that you'd be like, oh, he's a better thrower than Michael Vick. Cam Newton, when he came out, oh, man, comparison to Michael Vick, bigger version of Michael Vick, substantially throws the ball a lot. Now, as far as the comparison, Michael Vick and the running, the thing I'll say with Joel Klatt is the running with Kyler is totally different than the running with Michael Vick. Michael Vick was a, man, you could call one of the oldest plays in the book, 18 sweep. The quarterback's the one number going through the eight hole. The quarterback get the ball and run around the right end. From Little League football, that's one of the first plays that they run. The best athlete's going to be the quarterback, and that's who Michael Vick was at 6 foot. Michael Vick was a violent runner. Michael Vick was unbelievably tough. He had the type of grit and everything that running backs have, but he just happened to be a quarterback. So how he ran the football is totally different. Kyler is a pocket passer. So when he drops back in the pocket and you see all these running lanes in front of him, he has the pick of the litter. He's more like a punt returner playing quarterback. Michael Vick is like a running back. So Michael Vick was special how he did it. Cam Newton is like a big, bruising, Mike Allstott type running back. So you can say Kyler's better than him because Kyler doesn't take bigger hits, but he's running in space because people have to defend the field. They have to stay in their passing coverage. They have to have a different set of disciplines. When you watch him running, it's more like, oh, I'm a punt returner. I get the ball in space, make a guy miss. Michael Vick is running through people. He's making contact.
Listen. Kyler Murray is far and away a more polished and better passer right now than maybe Vic ever became.
Yes.
Certainly at Virginia Tech. Vic's last year at Virginia Tech, he threw for 1,200 yards. Threw for 1,200 yards and was the consensus number one overall pick. You know why? Because we watched those games and we had never, not Randall Cunningham, not Steve Young, not Fran Tarkington.
No.
We had never seen a quarterback who could run like Vic does. So with respect to Joel, and I understand the numbers actually support Joel's argument. Kyler ran for 1,000 yards this year. Vic's career high at Virginia Tech was under 700. Man, I watched those games. I was a high schooler in awe watching Michael Vick take his team to the brink of a national championship his freshman year and then be almost as good the next year, where it was, you knew to stop Virginia Tech's offense, you had to stop Vic running the football, and you couldn't do it. He's taller than Kyler, he's certainly thicker than Kyler, and he is faster than Kyler because he's faster than just about everybody. Like, so you can make the argument Kyler's going to be a better pro, whatever, but he is not a better runner of the football than Michael Vick. Michael Vick is the most dynamic runner of the football as a quarterback we've ever seen. Cam might be the most effective because he can do it so long.
Mm-hmm.
He's so big. He can take the punishment. But the fear Vic instilled in other teams with his legs was unlike any quarterback at the collegiate or pro level we've seen. That's not a knock on Kyler. Everybody fails the Mike Vick test in that regard, in my eyes, with respect to Joel Klatt.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, the Cowboys front office putting pressure on Jason Garrett. That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. Look who's here, NBA champ Antoine Walker.
What up, Antoine?
Joining
good
us.
See you,
good seeing you, man.
Yes, sir.
A lot going on with your former team, with the Lakers. Let's start with the Lakers. Bit of good news, bad news for them. Bad, you know most of it, Antoine. They've lost 7 of 10. No team chemistry, no team defense. questionable coaching. I will stop there.
What's the good?
The good? Well, the Lakers, despite all of that, could still make the playoffs.
Okay.
If you squint and you move things around, all they got to do is jump over a couple teams and grab that last spot in the West, where they'll probably face the Golden State Warriors. But it is still grabbable. Former Laker James Worthy weighed in. He said, it seems like there's a virus on this team right now. Antoine, in your opinion, what has gone so wrong for this Lakers team?
I think, obviously, you got to start from the beginning. The injury to LeBron James really hurt them. I thought they were going to be a very good playoff team at that point. Rondo was playing extended minutes. Lance Stevenson was in rotation. Now you're at a point now where those guys are not even a part of the team anymore, it seems like, because Rondo's now not starting at point guard. I think with the Lakers, Rondo should be starting at point guard. I think you got to have that energy that Lance Stevenson brings you off the bench. I think JaVale McGee's been pretty solid for when he's healthy, he's on the floor. But they've lost their identity because, obviously, the trade talks, this young group. I told you it was young group. LeBron took a different approach and didn't really bag them and kind of bailed out on them a little bit too early. And it's costing them now because I don't think those guys got the same goals as LeBron James.
The Rondo thing is so interesting because if memory serves, the last game Rondo started was the game winner against Boston. Mm-hmm. Game winner against Boston, the big 18-point comeback at the buzzer, and then they trade for Reggie Bullock, and all of a sudden they're starting a no-point guard lineup. Because if you want to argue Lonzo should start over Rondo, fine. Like, I'll listen to that.
Yes.
But Lonzo's been out. And so Rondo, we know Rondo can be mercurial. We know Rondo can be prickly. And it seems to me that once he got removed from the starting lineup after what was the high point for him of the season individually, he seems to have disengaged. We know that the net rating for the veteran guys has been the problem. The young guys, the guys that everyone is worried about, whether or not they have been emotionally scarred by it.
And have taken all the blame.
Right. Ingram is playing the best basketball of his career the last 2 weeks. Kuz has been pretty consistent throughout.
Yes.
Lonzo was included in the trade talks, but he's injured.
He's not even playing.
Zubat isn't on the team anymore. So those are the young guys that were at play. I mean, you want to include Josh Hart, fine, but it doesn't matter really. It's Rondo. His net rating has been one of the worst on the teams.
Yep.
Lance as well. JaVale and Beasley's gone now. But those have been,
right,
those are the four worst net ratings on the team. It's the veteran guys who have been right now in addition. I'm not leaving LeBron out of it. But to speak to your point, that have been the biggest detriment on the team.
And it's time to start spreading out some of that blame. We automatically knew it was going to be tough for the younger players because their names were actually attached with it. But let's not forget how this roster was put together. When you get LeBron, you only have a certain amount of flexibility. You go to Rondo. You go to Lance Stevenson. And LeBron is a part of those conversations. You give them a specific role for what they're going to do. Now we get into the trade talk. And we just assumed that it was going to affect just the younger players. But Michael Beasley talked his way out of there because him and the coach had some real words. We know how Rondo is difficult, and now his minutes have been affected. He's not even starting with Lonzo being out, so that has to be a huge problem. And Lance, if Lance is not playing, Lance is no team builder. If Lance is not on the court making it dance, it is not working for Lance. Lance is not the type of player that if you don't have him involved, man, what type of value is he going to bring to this very, very young roster? So I think we underestimated all this trade talk, how it would affect their roster and especially those veteran players.
I think I think you make a good point there. When the roster being the way it was with the playoff talk hurt these guys, then they got to look at how they won the beginning. The beginning they played Rondo at the point guard position. Josh Hart was in the rotation, giving them great minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So he was hurt right before All-Star break. He's trying to get back on the floor. They just don't have the same chemistry. But I think the talk with Magic Johnson, having them out to Philly, did not work. That was a big thing. That did not work. I don't think that rubbed guys well because, the way he talked to them was like, you got to be an adult and accept this. I don't think they hit them well. Then LeBron just changed, went 360 at the All-Star break. We're going to go into playoff mode. When it was just all about trade talk before All-Star game. I just think it's a discombobulated locker room. Things are not on the same page. I think guys are looking at the day. They're going to be out of here anyway.
Well, that's the other aspect of this. When we talk about what the trade talks did to the young players, and I totally, by the way, while I might not support entirely the players, the actual people they brought in as far as basketball style, the one-year deals were a necessity. You had to keep your max cap space open, right? Like, I understand why you would do that. Mm-hmm. One of the problems, though, with signing all your offseason acquisitions being one-year deals is if it starts to go the other way, it's real easy to let go of the rope when you know you're going to be looking for a new team next year. When every single guy you brought in was a mercenary hired gun that knows my money is allocated to Kawhi Leonard or to Kyrie or whomever, then if things aren't going well, they're going to start going really poorly. But and I spent a lot of the show yesterday talking about LeBron doesn't look healthy. His defense has been the worst of his career. So obviously, a lot of this falls on his shoulders. But the other aspect of it is when LeBron was out, and even since he's been back, if you have, in my eyes, just competent NBA coaching, you do not lose home to the Knicks. You do not lose home to the Cavs. You do not lose to the Hawks right before the break. And those three games by themselves, they're right now in the seventh spot. Those three games, they're fine. And so the terrible losses against terrible teams has earned the eight spot, pardon me, a half game out of the
spot. But you also got to think about Luke Walton, too. He's thinking the same thing like a player. He probably feels like he's got 1 foot out the door, too. So
I expect the coach to be above that.
Well, I think you got to understand how, first of all, he got the job. When he coached and was 39-4, he had three All-Stars.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And they was a well-oiled machine. It's not hard to coach that. I don't know how much coaching he really did. Now you got to really coach, get rotations. You see some of the things that he's struggling with, getting consistency out of guys, getting guys to play at the max effort when LeBron James was out, the bad losses they have. They have a lot of bad losses.
Can we go back to the veterans just for a second? We talk oftentimes about their net rating, and it's not just the young guys, it's them. LeBron wanted those guys. I mean, those were guys that LeBron wanted, just like he wanted, or there were hints that he wanted Carmelo Anthony. I mean, they haven't all worked out. Do you place any of the blame on him thinking he could get those veterans?
Well, you have to realize now, you're not getting Whole Food type groceries. I mean, you're limited in what you can spend. Like, they need a backup point guard, but there is a price that goes with, okay, who are we going to have? So LeBron didn't select these guys.
He signed off on them.
Right.
He didn't, and that is the key point. LeBron is, and I'm going to say this all week, he's not the general manager, and he's not Anthony Davis's agent. There are a lot of things LeBron is. He seems executive producer. Now, all of a sudden, part-time rapper, it would appear. There's a lot of things LeBron is. He's not the general manager of the Lakers. And if people want him to say, I veto, you cannot bring in Lance, okay, that's one thing.
That ain't true.
Say it again.
Okay. That he's not the GM of the Lakers.
But in these decisions,
he went out and picked the free agents this summer?
Magic Johnson is not signing one player without LeBron James saying yes.
I'm saying he's signing off on it, but he's not presenting a list.
Oh, I don't think that. I think he's waiting on them to call him, and they'll ask LeBron James' opinion. Do you want to play with this guy? Is this cool? But they're definitely asking him.
Yes, we agree on that.
I agree that they are not certainly Lance, because they had that the troubled relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He has to sign off on it. But it is the GM's job to. And Pat Riley was not going to LeBron James and saying, what free agent should we sign? It's the GM's job to.
That's also one of the reasons why he left Miami.
True.
One of the reasons why he left Miami was what?
Because he couldn't control the roster.
Okay. I mean, I think he left Miami because he saw the writing on the wall.
So you think he can control the roster now?
No, that's not the... When you get LeBron James in year number 16, it's baked in based on... Because he knows a lot about basketball. He's got good relationships. And he put that roster together in Cleveland. Now, he made some really good decisions. All right? So he should be a part of the... He's the smartest basketball player we have in the NBA. I would utilize him as a resource.
The last thing I'll say on this, David Griffin, the GM of the Cavs, came out just this week and said how frustrating it was when he heard that LeBron was the GM of the Cavs, that it wasn't true, that it wasn't the case, that it's not how it worked. Now, would he with Miami say, I think I can help us get Mike Miller? Sure, I think there's an element to that. Would he say to the Cavs, we got an extra roster spot, spend it on Champ, spend it on James Jones? Absolutely. And I think he signed off on these moves. But he's not the one executing these contracts. He's not the one, in my eyes, selecting the players.
All right, we'll take a break. Antoine, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, one Cowboy executive speaks out on the future of quarterback Dak Prescott. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, the Dallas Cowboys will be wrapped up in payroll this offseason. A number of players looking to get big money. Stephen Jones was very clear on who the top priority is, and that is Dak Prescott. But he said they also want to pay Zeke and DeMarcus Lawrence. Jones elaborated on the team's offseason plan.
I think in terms of cap space, I mean, we're looking to maximize this football team. We're a good young football team, and we made it to a certain level, which in our minds we feel like we could have, should have done better. But, you know, we're ready to take the next step. And obviously if you take the next step, then you're knocking on the door, if not winning it. And certainly we want to put a team around this group of young players that can compete to win a championship. And we feel like we've got the players to do it. And we're certainly not going to be conservative in terms of how we move forward with our personnel.
All right, CeCe, when you think about the job that the Cowboys brass has to do now, how will the way in which they pay the Cowboys skill players affect their immediate future, all these stars that need to get paid now?
Well, it's just a matter of the pie is the same diameter, same measurements every team has. They have the same amount of money to be able to spend. So Dallas has to prioritize, because in the past what they've done is they have paid their best players, and that's been on the offensive line. And there's no other team that we've seen that has spent the type of money on their offensive line like the Dallas Cowboys. Now that offensive line, it's not the best part of their team. It's an important part of their team, but it's not the best part. And also, when you're trying to manage your salary cap, you don't have to not look at right now. You have to try to measure where you think the salary cap is growing, what percentage is growing at, but what players might in the next 2 to 4 years that I would have to make this type of investment into. So they will look at, they will change some of the contracts of their offensive linemen, all right? They will make that money go to their skilled guys, Dak being the number one priority. Zeke is the best football player on the team, and they just traded for Amari Cooper, so he's going to get a new contract too. So now most of their skilled guys are going to be their highest paid guys, a lot like the Pittsburgh Steelers were when they had Ben, A.B., and L. Bell. Like, that's where all their money was going. Dallas Cowboys are going to have to try to be able to manage that, realizing that Jalen Smith and the other linebacker, their contracts are going to be up in a couple more years. So it's part of doing business in the National Football League. It's a good problem to have. They have talented players. Now, how I manage that pie, what size slice I give to everyone, it becomes important not only for the next year, but it becomes important for the next 5 years.
And it's the prognostication part is critical. Because, for example, Byron Jones has 1 year left on his deal. That's $6 million. That is a bargain. And then he will hit the lottery if they don't franchise tag him the following year. If this year he has any type of year like he did last year. But when it comes to, so you could try to sign a guy like that early. They tried to do that with DeMarcus Lawrence a couple years ago. They didn't get it done. DeMarcus then got better and better. Then Randy Gregory gets suspended. David Irving might get suspended. And now DeMarcus Lawrence can hold him up. Like, now DeMarcus Lawrence is a true free agent. They really don't have the ability to franchise tag him. And it is a drastic position of need. So they're going to have to break the bank for him. Zeke, because the Rams put the Cowboys in kind of a bad spot with when they paid Todd Gurley, Zeke's going to expect his money.
And Stephen Jones even said, we're going to have to start at the Todd Gurley line for Zeke.
Which I don't know why they're talking about these things. I don't know why. No other team is doing it. And why Jerry and Stephen have been so public and so adamant that, of course, Dak's getting a contract extension this summer. Why? You do not have to. You have him under contract this year, and you have the ability to franchise tag him. You could even, Kirk Cousins thing, theoretically, you could have him for the next 3 years at a good deal. And the rush to give money to, of all the pending free agents, to me, the guys we're talking about, he's the least proven. And I know he's the most important, but he's the least proven.
And this is where the difference in philosophy is. I don't believe the Cowboys think that. And that's what, when they think he's the most important, that's the reason why. The reason why they're not going to franchise him and do like Kirk Cousins, because they don't feel about Dak the way Washington felt about Kirk Cousins.
Sure.
So their feelings will be reflected up. They think he deserves a new contract. They're going to give him a new contract. That's all that they've talked about. But to me, I would be going to Dak in understanding that you're a system player. We'd like to have you here in Dallas, but we need to have you at a certain price. If they were able to get Dak at a certain price, a little under the market value, then that would alleviate some other problem, give you more room to have flexibility to your other skilled guys.
But the reality is in 2018, the Dallas Cowboys had the cheapest quarterback room in the NFL. They had the cheapest defensive back room in the NFL. They had the second cheapest tight end position in the NFL. And all of those spots are getting more expensive. You mentioned earlier they got to bring in a safety, we would think. Mm-hmm. And Byron Jones, I'm sure they would like to extend. They clearly need a real tight end, no matter what Blake right. Jarwin and Jeff Swaim did at the very end of the year. And Dak ain't going to make $800,000 anymore. He's supposed to make $2 million this year, and they want to give him an extension. That doesn't even mention the money for Ezekiel Elliott. The reason why they had to have that cheap of rooms there is because their offensive line is so far and away the most expensive in the league. In 2019, their offensive line is projected to make $58 million. That's 30% of your cap. 30% of your cap on a 53-man roster to what is essentially a 5-man unit. Call it an 8-man unit because of the backups. Like, that's disproportionate. And you're going to have to go to some of those guys
yes.
and see if they'll take a reduction. The problem is Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, and Travis Frederick are both all signed through 2023, and they are all at the top of their position salary-wise, except for Tyron Smith, who's now it's dropped down a few spots. I don't know what conversations you have with the agent, because the agent knows you can't cut any of those guys. So how flexible will those players really be?
And then that's the question. Do you have to pay your skill guys. What happens to that line that you've put so much time and effort into in protecting the guy that you're about to pay?
Offensive linemen are really smart. All right, you don't see a whole bunch of offensive linemen making really, really dumb contract moves. The Dallas Cowboys, their offensive linemen, I believe they'll realize, man, we got really good skilled guys. They're very, very young. I can extend my career. We can keep this. Playing with that star on your helmet is a little bit different. Same thing I try to tell Antonio about, hey, you want to go out Pittsburgh? It's a lot of cold weather. It might be in the same part of the country, Buffalo, but it's different up there with that logo on your helmet than having the Pittsburgh Steelers logo. So I think those offensive linemen, they realize it's a luxury to be able to play for the Cowboys, not only from a skilled standpoint, but from an offensive line standpoint, the type of skilled guys you'll be blocking for.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, back to basketball. Are the Celtics in danger of losing Kyrie? We'll talk about that next on First Things First. Check out the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Sunday, 3:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. All right, we'll get to Kyrie and the Celtics in a second, but first, a couple of big plays from last night. College Hoops, Liberty University's Caleb Holmesley with a big one-handed throwdown.
Liberty University trying to get in the sports scene a little more and more. They hire Hugh Freeze in football. They got some legitimate basketball recruits. Now, I got some questions about how Liberty's getting these recruits, but that's for another
day.
They're
doing a lot of praying.
That's well done.
To the G League. Oh! Grayson Allen playing for the Salt Lake City Stars. Check out the one-handed alley-oop.
Go ahead, C. I know you're happy for Grayson. Good for him, trying to make his NBA career.
Man, that dude is playing in the gym where they got one side of the bleachers rolled up now. He's a long way from Duke.
Long way from Duke. And can we – next time we run
ain't
that,
no
I think –
ain't no Cameron crazies there, homie.
On his way up the court, just watch him. I think there's a defender that got tripped trying to chase him.
Knicks and Magic. Alonzo Trier are getting to the basket with a nice spin move.
All right, Knicks. Alonzo Trier, Mitchell Robinson, those guys are going to be nice complimentary players to go along with KD and Kyrie next year. Future's bright, New York. Frankie Nicotine needs to start actually playing, but these guys are some nice players.
All right, let's move on to the Celtics. They got blown out by 23 points to the Toronto Raptors last night. The Celtics' biggest loss of the season. Kyrie, who just days ago said nobody could beat this Celtics team in 7 games, was held to just 7 points last night. Boston has dropped 5 of their last 7 now. Is it chemistry? Is it effort? Is it coaching? Here's Marcus Smart when asked what he thinks is wrong with the team.
We're just not together. The last couple of years, we were together. When everything hit, we become stronger. We're not there yet. Like I said, we're going to get there. It's just taking time.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus' opinion?
Is it yours?
Brad talked about just defensively, guys been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, do you feel like?
I don't know. It's up to Brad.
Let's see.
I've been in that situation many a times. Not a good feeling.
Oh, you just don't want to answer and just trying to get out of there as quickly as possible.
All right, Nick, this next stretch for the Celtics, this playoff push, how is that going to affect Kyrie's future with Boston?
It's the only hope they have to keep him. The only hope they have to keep him is a minimum of an Eastern Conference Finals run and probably more than that. But if this if the playoffs go the way this season has gone, which is they'll be lucky to get out of the first round and be a heavy underdog in the second round, then he's gone. Why would he stay? Like, someone make the argument as to why Kyrie Irving, when this season has been already a disappointment. Vegas had him with the second highest projected win total of any team in basketball behind only the Warriors. Why this season, which has not been fun, which has not involved a lot of winning, which has not involved anything other than Kyrie's individual numbers are some of the best of his career, but he doesn't look like a guy that's having a great time. He has talked about the struggles of being a team leader, of being the man on a team. Why would he stay? Because NBA players are so well known to love living in Boston? I'm not aware of that. Like, why? Because he gels so well with the coach? Doesn't seem that way. And I still believe Brad Stevens is a very good coach. But certain players fit certain styles better than others. Like, what's the argument for it? Because he's from Boston? No, he's from up here. Like, or down here, I guess, compared to Boston. I can't see a scenario where he stays unless the Celtics have some playoff switch, something clicks, and the team that most people thought they would be, the overwhelming favorite in the East, shows up here in about 6 weeks.
Let's just say the Celtics right now were the one or two seed in the East. What do you think the questions would be?
Oh, I mean, can they compete with the Warriors?
Right.
How good, you know, how much of this team will you trade to get Anthony Davis, or do you just want to run it back?
Right. And then Jenna might re-tee us up and be like, have the Celtics increase the chances of keeping Kyrie Irving?
Of course.
Yeah, and we'd be like, so now that they're not winning.
And the answer would be a unanimous yes. And it would be obvious.
Yes, and now we've had multiple veteran players. Marcus Smart, don't like it. We don't play together.
Marcus Morris.
Man, we're not having a good time. Kyrie Irving, in the fall, I'm coming back. Oh, I don't want to talk contract till the summer.
Talk to me July 1st. I don't
all know the body would. Language. But I think the most important thing in this was something we didn't see on TV. And Nick, in talking with you, was Danny Ainge had a conversation with Kyrie Irving before he met with the media.
Right. According to NBC Sports Boston, I want to give credit because I obviously didn't see it. When they open up the locker room to the reporters, Danny Ainge and Kyrie are having a little quiet powwow. Kyrie then does a couple questions, which I did see, on the players-only broadcast on TNT. And then he has his very concise 19 total words in his answers to the local and national media who's there. And I'm very curious what those – I feel like Danny Ainge, this is the constant massaging of the relationship. This is what he is more worried about right now than anything else is, will Kyrie stay? Because if Kyrie doesn't stay, they're not in the game for Anthony Davis. If Kyrie doesn't stay, and if he leaves and Anthony Davis isn't there, then who are they really? What is their team really, other than $55 million next year allocated to Horford and Gordon Hayward?
Yes, and I do understand when you're in that predicament as a player, you're frustrated, you're within 10 or 15 minutes of the game finishing, so you're trying to get your thoughts together. And sometimes you do get tired, even though it's a responsibility, of just doing these interviews. But the things that really maybe raised a little extra for me was when you asked about another player, typically we have a relationship that if a player says something, I'm going to back up what the player said because we're together. Marcus Smart said, well, you guys aren't playing together. He didn't even quite, I don't even want to be a part of that. Well, that was his opinion. Then we go to the coach. Well, what did the coach say? You guys are taking shortcuts. I'm not going to even validate the coach as being right. So I'm a man on my own island. Whatever they said is on them because Kyrie Irving's been questioned by his teammates of his leadership and things he said earlier. So now after the biggest loss of the season, you know what he says? I'm not going to respond and or qualify any of the answers that those other guys said because I'm by myself.
And because he had just put himself on an island after the Bulls game. He said, nobody going to beat us in seven.
Yes.
All right, well, Toronto's one of those teams. It's one thing to lose to the Bulls. They're not going to be playing the Bulls in the playoffs. They're not going to be there. But Toronto just whooped you. And
You feel that confident right now? You going to say after that game, a game where you get beat by 23 in the second quarter, oh, they can't beat us in seven. Not, you know what? You're right. So they whoop you in five right now. Like, it wouldn't get anywhere close to seven.
You said earlier Danny Ainge's biggest issue right now is keeping Kyrie Irving. And who are they without Kyrie Irving? Well, maybe they're the team that made this incredible playoff push last year without Kyrie Irving. Maybe they're the team that somehow, some way, in this system that Brad Stevens has put together, somehow finds a way to play better when Kyrie Irving is not in the mix, even though the metrics say otherwise. Maybe they're the team that just plays better without one superstar, even though it might be short-lived and overrated.
And listen, if they are that team, then fine, so be it. But
that rope will only get you so far.
Right. That team cannot ever win a championship in today's NBA. The only way that team can win a championship is if Jason Tatum turns into a Kyrie Irving level player. Mm. And like what that team did last year was very impressive. They won a 7-game series against Milwaukee where they were 4-0 at home and 0-3 on the road. They then went to Philadelphia. They stole one road game in overtime, the game where the Philadelphia guy, remember, set off the confetti cannon because it looked like Philly had won. They win that series in five, and then they go 3-1 at home against the Cavs and 0-3 on the road, and LeBron sends them home. Like, teams like that have a ceiling. You have to have stars to win championships in this league. We've seen one team in the last 40 years win a title without a true superstar. Mm-hmm. The 04 Pistons, and it was a confluence of a lot of events that came together for that team to do it. It's not a legitimate way to win championships.
And you can't create a system that does not leave room or the variance within that system to have a guy that can take over the game. In the NBA, if Brad's going to be a quality coach for a long time, you need a couple different systems. And one's got to include, I need a superstar. Because you're going to have the same thing. What if you get Anthony Davis? That system has to include a superstar in this new NBA.
And just very quickly, you didn't pull off the heist of the century in that Nets trade to be in 2019 saying, but give us 3 years for our young guys to develop. Mm-hmm. You did it because you were going to win championships or compete for them right now, and the Celtics look a long ways away.
All right, coming up, hey, what's the most important thing Kyler Murray has to prove at the Combine? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. Browns defensive end Myles Garrett made the Pro Bowl with 13 and a half sacks last season, but check out his hops, windmill dunk.
The best athletes in the NFL, see, with respect, I believe, overall, are the pass rushers, the defensive ends, the guys they're most likely to be.
Best athletes?
You disagree with me?
I totally disagree with you. It's either the wide receivers or the defensive back. They can do more athletic things. Now, you might be surprised by how high some of the defensive linemen
they're
can
so
jump.
Big.
But the best athletes, it has to do with running and jumping. Okay? Now, Myles Garrett, he's a freakish athlete of the defensive linemen.
I'm thinking Myles Garrett, Julius Peppers.
But there's only a couple of them. You got also a couple hippos and rhinoceros. I mean, them things, they ain't moving.
All right, hold on.
Okay?
We're talking about two different things. And so you're talking about if we put all the wide receivers in the league.
And the defensive backs.
And defensive backs. I'm talking about if we were to say who are the five best on all the league at raw athletes.
I'm still going with those positions. Absolutely.
Patrick
that would
Peterson,
be
Odell,
yes.
Miles
yes.
Garrett would be on.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll discuss more. Nick's list tomorrow. Best non-football athletes.
I thought
in
you guys were
going to
ask me about those palm trees in the background.
Oh no.
Man, I'm sick of this concrete.
Time for stories to start your morning. Tough
to
news
you.
For the Cowboys. Defensive end Randy Gregory was suspended indefinitely by the NFL for violating the league's substance abuse policy. See, what was your reaction to this?
It's unfortunate for him. He's one of a number of guys through the years I've tried to help, tried to give him the power through rehab, through the system of AA, through going to meetings, the system that's worked for me for almost 30 years. And I wrote a letter for the league to try to get him reinstated because the opportunity for him to be able to provide for his family playing football is very, very important. But he struggled like a lot of other talented other players that struggle with the disease.
I think for people that are going through something like this, hearing a story like Randy Gregory's can be disheartening. Like, man, if he can't stay sober or clean, how can I? I just,
I just want to use my time here for a moment. Like, there's going to be stops and starts for a lot of people. I know you're on 28 years running, but prior to that, I think there were probably some stops and starts where it could have been a longer period of time. Like, it's a daily thing, and it's tough. I wish the best for Andy Gregg or anyone watching.
I wish people would look at it like cancer. And if your cancer came back, what would we do? You know, we'd get you to
fight it again.
And that's the same way that we would do. Randy Gregory, call me, man. Anybody out there, call me, because I still got feelings for you.
Moving on, after all the controversy, the end of the NFC Championship, there has been no consensus reached on changing the rules for NFL replay. Nick, is this the right move?
I was so glad when I heard John Mara yesterday say there's no momentum towards making non-penalties reviewable. Like, I guarantee you it would not make the viewing experience better. And in general, in sports or otherwise, you shouldn't change the way you do things because of an outlier event. Because of a black swan event, don't change the way you do things entirely. The reason this was so controversial is because this never happens. If every week, you know why we changed the catch rule? I say we. The NFL changed the catch rule? Because every week there was a controversial catch.
Yeah.
If every week
there
was a play
like this. Idiots didn't know what the rules
were. Okay, fair enough. But if every week there was a play like this, then we would need to change it. But there's not.
And if the NFL thought, the NFL's done a great job in the last 5 years of changing rules, not what's best for the player, but what's best for the product and the viewing audience. This right here, if they thought it was going to be better for the viewing audience, they would have changed it. They got it right here.
All right, finally, the NFL Combine is this weekend. All eyes on Kyler Murray, his height, how much he'll throw, how much he'll impress GMs. Surprisingly, though, several scouts are saying Kyler's hand size will actually be the most interesting measurement at the Combine. The old hand size. See, why is hand size so important?
The reason why the hand size is so important in the NFL is because the NFL's partnered with Wilson, and Wilson makes a number of footballs, but no football is made like this football. The circumference of the football, the length of the football, the way it's made, there's no stripes on it. If you look at all the other divisions that play, Little League, Pop Warner, there's stripes on the football. High school football, there's stripes on it. College football, there's stripes on it. CFL, north of the border, there's stripes on the
football. And that affects people's ability to catch it, I learned from you. It's not just a visual thing. When people hear stripes, like, what does it matter what it looks
like? Like that white stripe that's right there.
That makes it easier for the college football. It's easier to see it. It's not because you're feeling the stripe. It's because you can see it through the air better. That's why the stripe matters.
So this football, your hand becomes very important because it's tougher to throw this football. Also, what you can do, what you can't do to football, we've gone through that through the years. You can't doctor the football up. So this football is hard to handle. So it's a job hazard if you got a small hand. With all the people around you in the pocket, if you can't cover this football, it makes it hard to be able to handle, and it makes it difficult to almost impossible to be able to throw it. And that's why we have seen guys through the years, the best throwers that we have of the football, they happen to have a ginormous hand. The best pass catchers that we've ever seen. My favorite wide receivers. None of those guys have small hands.
So what's a big, in your eyes, what's a big hand?
Any hand over 9.5 is a big hand.
And you're measuring what, pinky to thumb?
Yes, they measure it across this way at the combine. It's the only time your hand is going to get measured. But it's a part of your job interview, and it becomes very, very important.
So how big do you say your hand is?
I think my hand.
You changed that question.
It's over 10. It's over 10 and a quarter.
Over 10 and a quarter.
Yes.
You're certain.
I have a ginormous hand.
You're certain of that.
Yes, and unusually long thumbs,
find
too.
Let's find this out. I knew this was coming up.
What's your tailor-made suit?
I got absolutely. It matches my suit. Let's find out, Chris Carter.
Let me get a little stretch first.
Okay.
All right. I want to compare it.
So we go there. To there.
Oh, yeah.
10 5/8 of an inch.
Okay.
Just for perspective.
For perspective, Jenna Wolf. Okay, Jenna, you make everything so awkward. Yeah. Jenna is at 7.5, which I have no idea. Now I'm going to feel left out.
All right, Michael Vick, one of the smallest hands we had in the NFL, it's 8.5 inches.
8.5 inches.
So you're just only an inch behind Michael Vick.
I'm so close.
You're
going to
be running with the football
an awful lot.
Nick, let me check you out.
All right, go ahead.
Because Nick's not that tall.
I'm 6'1".
Let me see across here. Oh, Nick, you're almost 9.5.
9.5 inches. So that would be, so for an NFL quarterback, 9.5's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, under,
because I've
got
a
list here. Because short quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, 10 1/4 inch hands.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Drew Brees, 10 1/4 inch hands. Brett Favre,
nearly 10.5-inch hands. Those are all quarterbacks under 6'2". So the bigger question is, Mike Vick, for example, tiny hands. 8.5 inches, like tiny hands by NFL quarterback standards. That's why this number is going to be so important for Kyler.
Do we have any documented measurement on what his hand size is or could be?
No. We don't know. Okay. We don't know what it's going to be, but what it does is with the football, in this NFL football, it allows you, because football is an outdoor game, and you can't draft a guy that's not going to be able to function or play outdoors with the football in his hand. And what it allows you to do when it's windy, you're able to throw the ball through the wind because you can cover the circumference and you can get that perfect spot between the laces and the end of the football that the quarterbacks like to be able to throw to get on top of the ball so they can spin it and be able to control it. So the smaller your hand, the less control you're going to have of the football, and the easier it's going to be for them to cause you to fumble.
What about the ability to throw without finding the laces?
If you got a bigger hand, you don't need the laces. There are guys that through training, they stop. Typically, the center is going to snap the ball where it's going to come up in your hand where the laces are on it. And then if you're in the shotgun, though, which we see a lot in the league, you see quarterbacks, when they get it, what they want to do is find those laces first. Mm-hmm. Most quarterbacks throw with the laces. People like Aaron Rodgers will tell you, I don't need to throw with the laces.
And we've seen some of the things. One of the coolest things I thought John Gruden did on TV with respect to him was the quarterback
camp. Well, he was actually better at TV than he is right now, but go ahead.
The quarterback camp stuff. Yeah. And one of the things he would have guys do is, now do some without grabbing the laces. Because yes. There's do some where. Mm-hmm. Under adverse conditions. So this is, I have been, of everyone at the desk, the most concerned about Kyler's height. If he comes out with 10-inch hands, which would be shocking for a guy of his height, football player or not, I will be less concerned. But if he, this is the type of analysis, I will admit, that before I spent a lot of time with you, I hated hearing guys talk about. The whole, oh, so you're telling me a half inch in hand size is the difference between first round pick, second round pick. Spending this much time with you about certain positions, yes. About guys trying to catch the football or throw the football, the actual hand size, because you to this day do these exercises that kind of cheat the test, like the different things you do, because you tell young players to do things.
Yeah. I think my right hand is bigger than my left.
Okay, well, fair enough. But the things you talk about, like breaking up the cartilage between your thumb so you can essentially make your hand bigger than it otherwise would be because your thumb can point down. Like, those are the things that really matter to these guys.
And there are short quarterbacks in the NFL with big hands. There are tall quarterbacks with small hands. Jared Goff happens to have small hands. Unfortunately for Kyler Murray, you'll hope he's not just a short quarterback with small hands.
Good. Yeah, you hope not.
Right.
You know.
We got to take a break. Much more. First things first, right
small
after this.
Small shoes. Small
socks. Small socks.
Little baby socks.
Yeah.
FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday starting at 6:30 a.m. Eastern only on FS1. Back here with Antoine Walker. We're talking about the Lakers' disappointing season. 3 games back of the 8 seed with just 22 games left. It's not great when you got the best player in the game on your team. One columnist of the San Francisco Chronicle said it makes no sense for a big name to join LeBron and the Lakers in free agency this summer. Antoine, is this true?
No, I think that's crazy for him to even make that point and say that. I mean, when you think about L.A., you got to start. First of all, L.A. is a perfect spot for a free agent destination. I mean, every player in the league would love to be in L.A. It's like a dream to play in. It's just one of those places. Great weather. Players will never talk about it. You have a great social life, which is
great
huge for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Good nightlife. So all those things play a part when being a free agent. So to think that a free agent does not want to go there is crazy. And then you get an opportunity, one, to play for Magic Johnson, play alongside LeBron James. Regardless of what people think, LeBron James is still the best player in the league. So you get an opportunity to play with him. I think for certain players, it could be maybe you may not want to do it. When you look at a Kawhi Leonard, who seems like he may want to be by himself. Obviously, Kevin Durant, another guy who may want to make his own legacy. But it's still guys that haven't won in their career. I look at Kemba Walker. Why wouldn't he want to go to play with? That's like that's a perfect spot for him. A Jimmy Butler, who's never really got over the hump. Another guy who could possibly want to go play there. So you got other free agents that would love to go to L.A. That's not going to be a problem for them.
Yeah, I wonder what the writer was saying on Christmas Day. Christmas night. When he went to write his article for the Chronicle there in San Francisco, the home where the Warriors play. I wonder what he wrote, because LeBron got hurt. Lakers beat Warriors. I wonder if he said that. Well, wow, man, LeBron James, you wouldn't want to join him in Los Angeles. I doubt if he was saying that. But he's been watching the NBA just like the rest of us. Over that 18-game stretch where LeBron was injured, you did not see the development of this roster. You have seen through the AD trade it to affect the roster, old and young, in an adverse way. They do have Luke Walton as their head coach, where there's a lot of questions about it. But Los Angeles has been a destination. I told you, I've been cheering for the Lakers since 1980. They made my brother the second-round pick. They had Kareem. They had Magic, Norm Nixon, Jamal Wilkes. And ever since then, they went through a period with Kobe and this young group that they have. But all through that era, I have watched them hoist banners and play for championships. And the players that play in the NBA now, it's not lost on them. The history, not only in Boston, but the history in Los Angeles. There's NBA players trying to get to New York, where only their grandfather and them know about the history that they had. So I believe that the biggest players, the best players, want to play in the biggest markets.
I feel like the demise of LeBron James has been greatly exaggerated, and we all need to pump the brakes a bit, okay? Nobody was saying LeBron's in a different phase of his career 9 months ago, when he hung 51 points in game one of the NBA Finals after going on the greatest Eastern Conference playoff run any player's ever been on. Nobody was saying LeBron's a different phase of his career his first 2 months with the Lakers. He then got hurt. And C has made the point that when the wall hits for guys, it comes up quick. But the wall almost never hits when you go from it. The wall is not, I'm the best player in the world, too. I can't play no more. It's when you have gone from one of the best players in the world to, I'm still an all-star. I'm still a really good player. And then it's, oh, now I'm washed. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what happened to Carmelo, by the way. Carmelo, MVP candidate, to an all-star, to a quality player, to that wall. The wall from quality player to washed comes quick. LeBron got hurt. And despite that, on the year, 27-9-8. Career high in rebounds, fourth most assists ever in his career, 51 from the field, 35 from three. Not by LeBron James standards the most efficient season, but still a season 98% of NBA guys would take. And what I would ask the audience is this. Assuming Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, LeBron plus Kyrie, are they a legit championship contender threat? Yes?
Yes.
LeBron plus Kawhi. Yes.
Yes.
LeBron plus Anthony Davis.
But we're banking everything on LeBron. He had an unbelievable year last year. He shocked us all with the season that he had last year, and obviously the playoff run. I think what we're basing everything on is LeBron James duplicating that same season. It's tough to do. He's 34 years old now. He needs help. That's why he's going out to try to get another star to join him. He understands that now. To ask him to have the same season he had last year, and I know the numbers kind of look the same, would be tough to do. And that's the run he needs to go on right now for them to make the playoffs. He has to go on an individual run and basically take over games and make sure they get wins.
And I don't think he's in the shape to do it in. And I think that
that wasn't obvious the last two games.
Right.
He shouldn't be, though. He missed 18. They went right to All-Star break, I'm pretty sure. I know LeBron works out a lot of time, but he probably took some time off
during the All-Star
break, and then he came right into season.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're back against the wall, and he has to come out and need to play at a very, very high level.
And the other element of this is, and the other reason why I think the Lakers will be a great free agent destination this summer, is what LeBron is going to have this summer for the first time in a decade is a summer rather than a quick little summer break, because his season's going to end about 2 months earlier than it typically does. Like, there's a reason we hadn't seen guys go to more than four straight finals since Russell's Celtics. LeBron, in the last 8 years prior to this year, has actually played almost 11 years.
Yeah, that's why he joined the Lakers, so he could miss the playoffs film Space Jam. He's doing Space Jam this summer, though.
I don't think that's why he joined the Lakers, but I do think there will be an element of the beginning of next season, a more rejuvenated LeBron than we have seen for quite some time, because the season won't be 110 games like it's been over the last decade.
Well, he don't have to worry about being a free agent destination spot. I don't know. No, everybody wants to go to L.A. It's a few spots in the NBA that players want to go. I'll probably say New York is one, then L.A. is second, and then you get the Bostons, the Chicagos.
Miami has been
Miami's one of those spots, but, It's not a basketball time.
Yeah, Pat Riley, though, too.
And Pat, and then
Pat Riley measuring your body fat, every conditioning test.
Every week.
So Miami the destination, but when you go to work, man, you better bring your hard hat.
And you're
going
3.5 hours.
Practice-wise?
With knee pads on.
The biggest problem for the Lakers this summer, and it's something the columnists in San Francisco didn't mention, and it's something that's gone over the radar, is the Clippers. The Clippers freed up their cap space. The Clippers right now look like a nice young team. They have Doc Rivers, and the guy running the Clippers is the guy the Lakers never should have let get out the building, in Jerry West. Like, the Clippers are the biggest threat to LeBron this summer, more so than anything else. That needs to be a real point of concern, because the Clippers can't offer the history of the Lakers, but the weather's the same. The nightclubs are the same. You know what I mean? So all of that is the exact same with the Clippers. That's the bigger threat, them getting off Blake Steele, them moving on from Tobias, having those, like, that's the threat for the Lakers more so than anything that columnist was discussing.
I had a pithy nightclub comment, but I'll just say that in a commercial break. Antoine, stick around. Coming up, are the Celtics in danger of losing Kyrie? That's next on First Things First. I didn't have any
whisper
pithy.
In my ear.
When was the last
time
you've been to the club, Jim?
One club.
When was the last time?
With some mediocre white dude.
1993. Check out the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Sunday, 3:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Antoine Walker. We are going viral. All right, so check out this video of Reggie Miller, who's now 53, shooting threes at the Pacers facility.
Okay. Still
get
got it.
Wet. Get it. That's what they say when they make buckets, Jenna.
Yeah,
that's their terminology.
Reggie will be able to shoot.
And that's hitting all bottom of the net, too.
Yeah, well, talk to me about that. No rim. They should give him 4 points. NBA players would be like, did that hit the rim? Don't hit the rim. Give him an extra point.
Absolutely. That's like the Steve Kerr, Steph Curry free throw competition. You lose a point if it hits the rim, even if it goes in. Now, Reggie will be able to shoot forever.
Yeah, he's top.
How's your jump shot today?
It wouldn't do what Reggie doing. Right
okay, all right. Okay, no problem.
See, this is the thing, though. Give me 10 shots to warm up, and we'll see what happens.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't want any smoke from Antoine.
Let me warm up.
None whatsoever.
All right, let's talk about your former team, Antoine. The Celtics. They got blown out by 23 points to the Toronto Raptors. For the Celtics, their biggest loss of this season. Kyrie, who just days ago said nobody could beat this team in 7 games, was held to just 7 points. We see you, Kyrie. Boston has dropped 5 of their last 7 games. So what's going on with this Boston team? Is it the chemistry with the guys? Is it the effort? Is it the coaching? Here's Marcus Smart when asked what he thinks is wrong with this team.
We're just not together. The last couple of years, we were together. And now things hit. We become stronger. We're not there yet. Like I said, we're going to get there. It's just taking time.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus in pain?
Is it yours?
Brad talked about just defensively, guys have been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, you feel like?
I don't know. It's up to Brad.
CeCe, how do you explain what has been going on with this Boston team in this most recent stretch?
It's really hard to explain. I mean, as talented as they are, and they were adding, after last year's run in the playoffs, they were adding 2 All-Stars in Gordon Hayward, not knowing where he was going to be, but he was a former All-Star, and Kyrie Irving. We thought Kyrie Irving would be back to All-Star form, which he has been, having one of his best seasons individually. But to me, what I'm seeing is, and if we listen to everything they said, they don't like being around each other. But I'm shocked, because I watch these sound bites of players and everything, and what I'm starting to find out is it's hard to explain why you lose. And I keep seeing guys struggle with it. They struggle with the questions and everything. And it's hard to explain why now is it so hard, Antoine, for the NBA players and just that constant media every day. Because I know I went under it, but now I'm starting to see it. But it seems like every game we're getting, they can't explain why they're losing. What are we watching right now?
It's unfortunate, but, you know, you want to be a leader in this league, you in the NBA, you have to be able to take the good with the bad. And one thing about being a leader, you got to, when the team is rolling, you're supposed to take the praise. You're supposed to praise your team and your teammates. But if you're the leader of the team and when things are going bad, you kind of shoulder the blame and take it on yourself as the leader of the team. And players respect that. And they usually respond to that. And that Kyrie Irving, it goes back to the phone call that he makes with LeBron James. He's not a leader. He's a great player. He's a superstar in this league. I would love to have him on my team. He's a closer.
Do you think we just appoint great players, leaders more often, and we miss on that?
Oh, without question. We always do that. Sometimes you don't know behind the scenes who's the leaders on the team. Sometimes you pick up a veteran guy, and he's the leader on the team. But in this situation, you can tell that they don't have no togetherness. I talked about that earlier. Nobody's going to dinner together. Nobody's hanging out. They're playing the games. And they're 13 games over 500. They're not having that bad of a season. But the goal was probably 60, 65.
Yeah. Mm.
Probably, contend for a title.
It's the weight of expectations.
Yeah. And they're not living up to it. And obviously, those guys haven't bought in completely to Jason Tatum's, Jaylen Brown. Whether the success they had last year, they feel like they should be in better spots, better roles. They haven't bought into it. And that goes, you got to start with Brad Stevenson on that. And then Kyrie Irving being the best player on the team.
During this three-game losing streak, they've lost 5 of 7. But these three games since the break, they lose a one-point game in Milwaukee. There's no shame in that. You get beat badly by the Bulls. There's some shame in that. And then you get whooped by the Raptors, a team you're going to have to go through. What is most notable about those three games is every single one of those games, they had a lead after the first quarter, and every single one of those games, they got annihilated in the second quarter once the bench unit came on. Is that something that can also add to some of the lack of continuity within the team that, all right, the starters got us in one spot, and then all of a sudden, by the time the starters, the full start lineup is back in midway through the second quarter, we're fighting uphill because the bench unit, which was supposed to be one of the strengths of the Celtics, has let go of the rope already.
Well, most teams, they come out the All-Star break, you probably had 25, 26 games. So most coaches going to put the schedule on the board, what we need to be at. We're starting to think about seeding, where you're going. The Celtics right now in the fifth seed, they're probably going to – I got them finishing 4. I think they catch Indiana.
Right.
So they're going to play probably Philly. Or they play in the other first round. So they may be able to get out the first round.
Right. But then it'd be Milwaukee.
But now it's going to be Milwaukee or Toronto. Yep. Probably going to be Milwaukee. And the season ends then. And that's where the disappointment comes in at, because the expectation was much higher. And sometimes you got to avoid teams that you're not good against, that just have your number. All these things take place after All-Star break, and I don't see it with the Celtics. And so certain games you want to see where you're at. Last night was a game.
Test yourself.
You want to see. Yeah. You want to see where you at. You want to see what guys play well against this team, certain matchups, and they laid an egg last night and got blown out.
So the leadership issue is an interesting one, because we've talked about the guys playing. We talked about Gordon Hayward coming back and the system and Kyrie and all of it. But can you win with a superstar but without a leader on your team? I mean, is that the one thing that seems to be missing with these guys? Leadership, something that you always talk about this, Antoine. These guys don't go out to eat together. These guys don't do things together. Is that what this team might be missing?
I think they are missing. I think when you see Kyrie Irving call LeBron James and ask him for leadership advice, I think obviously it's on the court and it's off the court. Mm-hmm. But that's something Kyrie has to be willing to do, regardless of with the Celtics the rest of this season or even going forward in his career. Whether or not he wants to be that 1A guy, or do he want to go join a Kevin Durant where he can be the 1A guy and he can take a back seat. He did a great job with the cameras being in LeBron James' face and not having to answer the big questions.
Right. I think some things that people miss when you're talking about a leader on the team, there's different levels of leadership. No one just has one leader. Like, you need other lieutenants, other people that have the authority to be able to do certain things, say certain things to certain guys. And for me, Al Horford has done a good job because he sacrificed his role. He's a max player and everything, but he sacrifices for this team. They play well with him on the court. You have not heard people say one negative thing about Al Horford. Marcus Moore, he can play for me. He can play basketball for me. He plays hard on both ends. He brings a certain grit to the court every day. And look at how other players respond to him. He's been a good leader. Now, how are we going to finish out games? Is this my team? Some of them little particular things that I know are very, very important to Kyrie Irving. When he demanded getting out of Cleveland, he demanded going certain places because he wanted his own team. Boston was not that team. And all these other top teams we have in the NBA, you can say they have one thing in common. One guy knows that's their team. And regardless of how deep Golden State is, that's Steph Curry's team. Go up and down. We even talked about Denver being the only team questioned by, okay, whose team is this of the top 8 teams? Boston, whose team is this? Is it Kyrie Irving's team? No, because if he would have had more positive comments talking about the summer and pending free agency.
To add to that, Chris, one thing about being a Celtic, I played there 7.5 years, is you get that pride when you're in that building and you're around all those ex-players because they're still very much connected to it. And you want to be a Celtic. And I said this last time I was on the show, I don't believe he's a true Celtic. I think he's in a situation where he knew he had 2 years. If it works out, we do something special, I may stay. But now I got an opportunity. I'm going to be a free agent this summer to go where I want to go. And you could tell by his comments. I mean, last night, you still 13 games over 500. You still in there. You lost. I mean, you had a bad game, but you're going to defend your team and say, we're going to move on. But to have no comments and to leave your other players out to dry, leave Marcus Smart comment out to dry, lets you know how concerned he is about sleeping on the Celtics.
But what we're talking about, the level of play demanded and the level of leadership demanded, we cannot just be nonchalant about how few players have ever reached that caliber. I can be an MVP caliber player throughout the year, be a leader of the team, and we can win a championship with me as the guy. Since Jordan retired, there's 7 guys that check that box. Shaq, Duncan, D. Wade, Kobe Bryant, Dirk Nowitzki, LeBron, and Steph. That we have had a bunch of great players over the last 20 some years. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant has not checked that box yet. Right? Like Giannis has not. Kawhi, as great as he was, he wasn't the guy, the leader. Kyrie, it's not unfair to say he's not that yet. Most guys never are that. Most guys never get to that level. And they need that from him. But the other thing they need is for guys to play better. They didn't get 2 All-Stars. They got 1 All-Star back because Gordon Hayward's not an All-Star. And they need Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier and, to a lesser extent, Jason Tatum to understand, you know what, this year might not have been as fun as the playoff run was. But another playoff run will be very fun. And if we pull the rope in the same direction, we're more likely to go on that playoff run. Because otherwise, this Celtics team is poised right now to be one of the most disappointing teams in recent memory. They were projected for the 2nd most wins in the NBA this year. Right now, they'd be out in the 1st round, lucky to be out only in the 2nd.
I believe you can play football at a high level professionally and not like each other because you got certain roles and stuff to play. I do not believe as a basketball and as a basketball family, Antoine, that you can be successful and not like each other. In the Celtics right now, we have heard that repeated theme. Don't like playing. Don't like being here. Not having a good time. For me, it's hard to be a championship team when you don't like those 12 to 15
guys. 2 championships I got with Miami. I told you the story, 15 strong. We were a very together group. In college, when I won a national championship, we're all right now on a group chat. All 15 guys still friends together. Mm. We still talk together. It's 2016. We celebrate our 20-year anniversary. We're still good friends. So usually when you're friends, you just can win some things.
Tell Ron Mercer we say what's up.
we're on a group chat. Text you at the commercial break. Antoine, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.